Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today. We'll be talking straw bale gardening today on Garden Talk. Great to have back Joel Karsten. He is the father of the straw bale gardening method. He's written a number of best-selling books on the topic. A couple of them have been recently released. And so it's always a lot of fun to talk with Joel because he's so, he has so much enthusiasm for straw bale gardening, and I can see why. I've been doing it myself. He talked me into it quite a few years ago, actually, and I've had a lot of fun with it over the years. So what are your questions about straw bale gardens? Have straw bale gardening changed the way you actually spend time in the outdoors with your gardening? Join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Joel Karsten, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me, Larry.
Well, it's always so much fun. You know, for those first, there are people out there probably haven't heard much about straw bale gardening. Give us a quick overview.
Well, you know, basically all we do is take a bale of straw, or it could be a bale of hay. You don't have to discount the hay if that's all you have available. That'll work. Straw is usually a little less expensive. We take that bale and we spend 2 weeks prepping the bale, what we call conditioning the bale. And what happens is the inside of that bale starts to break down and become soil. So by the time we plant, a couple weeks down the road, you're really not planting into a straw bale per se, but you're planting into a recently decomposed straw bale, which is really the important thing. You need to get that process started before you plant. And basically all that's happening is the inside of that bale is filling up with bacteria. The bacteria begins to break down the cells of the straw itself and turn those cells back into molecules, which are then freely available to be reabsorbed through the roots of a new plant. So it's a lot of biology, but all of it's happening so small that unless you have a microscope, you really can't see it.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you can plant seeds, you can plant plants, do pretty much whatever you want in a straw bale.
Right, yeah, you can transplant into it just a normal tomato like you normally would into the soil, or peppers or whatever, or you can just plant seeds directly in. If you're going to do tiny seeds like carrots and radish, things like that, you want to put a seed bed on top of the bale. And to make that seed bed, don't use soil, because then you're going to bring weed seeds and disease and insects, which we can avoid. If you just get a little bag of potting mix from the garden center and use a little thin layer of that just to hold the seeds in position until they have a chance to germinate. And once they germinate, that root will shoot down into the bale, because of course those plants love the warmth that's coming out of those bales. That's one of the key factors that makes straw bale gardens so advantageous in our part of the world, is that they get warm inside. Yeah. And that warmth, you know, encourages early season root production, whether it's a transplant or from seed.
Yeah, and it's so easy, really, when you get when you get the steps down right. What are the mistakes people typically make?
I'll tell you the biggest mistake I see people make, truly, is they overwater. And if you water too much, you know, you can end up washing, sort of like leaching the inside of the bale, and you wash all these newly forming little soil particles and newly forming bacteria, you wash them right out of the bale. So it's kind of hard to get people convinced that you really only need to use a gallon of water each time you apply moisture to the bale, just 1 gallon, and that bale will absorb that gallon of water, and that's plenty to keep the moisture level up to grow bacteria. Now, once your plants are in there, you get a, you know, 8 foot tall tomato with 60 tomatoes growing up on top of it, you might need to water a couple, 2 or 3 times a day. But each time you water, you only give it 1 gallon. And the easiest way to do that, as everybody knows, is to use an automated hose end timer, which you just hook to a soaker hose. You run that soaker hose on top of the bale, and then you set that timer just like you would your alarm clock. You know, how many times, what time you want it to go off and how many times a day or whatever. And they're real easy to set up, and then you just walk away from it, and it'll take care of watering your plants for you all summer.
So. Yeah, it works well that way. Unless you got a rainy season, then you need to maybe turn it off once in a while.
Yeah, exactly. I know last summer and the summer before, we got good rain here in Minnesota most of the summer. So I think last summer I only watered about 4 times the whole summer. and if you let Mother Nature take care of it, and you know, she'll fill up those bales, you know, once or twice a week, usually that's enough. So
yeah, I keep a pail. I've got a 5-gallon pail next to the hose, and what I do is I don't have a system like that, but with the 4 bales or so that are right next to the house, I just fill that up and I can sort of judge what a gallon is.
Yeah, exactly. It helps too. And early in the spring, if you do fill up a pail, because then that pail water warms up to air temperature where, you know, the water early in the spring, when we first turn our faucets on, boy, that water's cold coming out of it. And that really cools down the bacteria. And that does the opposite of what we're trying to do inside these bales is warm them up. So my books, I always say use warmed water. And what people think is that means they got to carry it out of the house. That's really not what I mean. What I mean is just put water in a bucket today and then use it tomorrow. And it'll be warmed up to air temperature, which, you know, if you're out there and it's 50 degrees, that water's 10 or 12 degrees warmer than it is coming out of the faucet if it's air temperature. So
yeah, makes good sense. Well, every line is filled, as it always is when you're on, Joel. Let's go to Gus in Fitchburg. Thank you, Gus, for waiting. What's on your mind?
Oh, well, thanks, Larry and Joel. Yeah, I saw Joel at the Garden Expo, but it was so busy there that I couldn't ask any questions with him. It was just so many questions. So I'm glad he's came back and, you know, trying to address some of our questions that we have. First, this year straw bale gardening last year for the first time, and this year I'm doing more. I'm doing it on a community garden where I have in Fitchburg, but then I'm also going at the community center in Fitchburg, going on the parking lot there because there are some spots in the parking lot that are kind of void and in between the parking stalls that I can put straw bales in. So I'm wondering if there's any issues with doing that, especially because I know one of your later books addresses some of those other spots. I'm also concerned about the temperature. You know, I got my bales started a couple days ago, and I've fertilized them twice, you know, with a half a cup each of fertilizer, of the standard fertilizer. And, you know, should I hold off on the fertilizer because of the temperatures is down? And, yeah, I certainly know about that temperature of the water, especially on the community garden where the temperature is 45 to 50. So I got to get a bucket out there to do that. And then my seeds washed away with my carrots last year, just not because I was watering too much, but it was the rain. We had some hard rains, and then those seeds are so small, you can't even see if they washed away. I'm wondering if it would be some row cover or something to put over them so that, because that fine mix that you plant them in, that all washed away, and the top of my bale was almost all gone. So
yeah, you know, there's actually I'll try to take them here in backwards order. The covering the seeds, there's a chapter in my book called The Straw Bale Greenhouse, and it's just a little pull cover that we can put over top of. You can use plastic or you can use a row cover cloth. And you just want to run that wire just 8 or 10 inches above the bale between the two fence posts, looks like you're setting up your trellis, and then just pull that little drape across, just like you're closing a shower curtain over top of the bales. And that'll keep them warm at night. If you get a cold night when you get some plants already in that bale, you get a cold night late in the spring, you can keep them covered and protect them from frost that way. But it also works when you plant tiny seeds to keep any heavy rain from washing those away. As far as the park planting in the middle of the parking lot, that'll be just fine. I have lots of examples of people who do a whole garden right on asphalt parking lot. And you'd think it would get too hot, but I tell you, if you're watering every morning and you're cooling off, the pavement around there usually gets a little wet when the irrigation goes off and the water goes off. It keeps it nice and cool. And, you know, you'll be able to tell if your plants are drooping a little bit. They'll just need a little bit more water. But a lot of plants, vegetable plants, really love hot weather. They like the heat. So, you know, don't be afraid of doing it on the edge of a parking lot. That's, a lot of people are very successful with that. And what was your second question? No,
I was thinking the one relating to temperature, but Gus, what?
There is one other concern I had. I mentioned it to the screener. This is my second year, and some of those bales have kind of fallen down a little bit, but I'd like to use those. And I know Larry has said that he puts potatoes in those. They're good for potatoes.
Yeah.
Is there anything else I can do plant in those? Maybe tomatoes would do too if I didn't have them last year, or if it doesn't matter if I had tomatoes in them last year that I can still plant tomatoes in there this year?
Sure. Well, here's the thing about second year bales is your second year bales are not going to get as warm or as hot as those first year bales do. So your warm season crops like tomatoes should go in a new bale because that's going to get warm again inside. Those second year bales work great. Sometimes what I like to do is smush two bales into one and so I to reconnoiter them into one bale and then wrap both of those with a piece of chicken wire and let the ends overlap and then put a little 2x2 behind those overlapping ends of chicken wire and staple it on, then twist the 2x2 and it tightens up around that what's now your new bale, but it'll kind of turn round in shape when you squeeze it together. And then use that for all your root crops. It does really well with beets and carrots, and your potatoes and sweet potatoes will do well in there. So use that second year sort of bin type bale for your second year crops or for your root crops in that second year bale. And then start the new bales for your warm season stuff, your peppers and tomatoes and all that, cucumbers, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I just, you know, the bales were broken up from the year before, so I just piled them all in a big pile and threw the potatoes into the pile.
Yeah.
You know, I dug them in, into the pile. And I actually had pretty good luck. Without even doing anything, just piling them up in a pile.
Or make a trough. A lot of people will take old pallets and they cut the pallet in half and then they tip it up on edge. And they make like a bin. And then they put their second or third year straw into that bin and use that for potatoes and other root crops.
Yeah.
And it tends to do really well. The other thing that does well in there is celery. Does really
oh,
well,
it does.
Believe it or not.
Huh.
Yeah, it does well in that second, third year mashed up straw. It does great. So,
Gus, thank you so much for calling. Don in Manawa, your turn. Hi, Don.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
This kind of ties into the last question was I have a whole bunch of galvanized water troughs, and I'm kind of wondering if you've ever had experience using those to put the straw bales in, because I like to weigh the soil compost after a year, and I hate to shovel it out somewhere. I wonder if you can just keep adding into it.
You sure can. Yeah, absolutely. Just when that one bale breaks down, you know, you may be able to use it for a year or two and then put a new bale on top of it. And then pretty soon you'll have that whole water trough filled up with beautiful composted straw, which will turn into the most beautiful soil you've ever seen. But just make sure you got some good holes in the bottom of that old tank because you want it to drain really well out of there.
Yeah.
But that'll work great.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of people that have done that.
There you go, Don. Good luck.
Would you recommend putting some gravel on the bottom there for a little drainage also?
Nope. No gravel. Just punch a couple of holes and that's really all you need. It'll find its way out.
Yeah. There you go, Don. Thank you so much. Sharon in Summit, we'll go to you next. Hi, Sharon.
Hi.
What's on your mind today?
My husband and I have had great success with our tomatoes, zucchinis, cucumbers in the bales. We love them. So I just heard your advice to use second-year bales for root veggies, and thanks for that. This weekend, we're planning on planting some carrots, radishes, onions, beets. And do you have any hints so that we are successful with these?
So you've got your bales all seasoned and everything, Sharon?
These are the second year bales that I'm talking about. No,
yeah.
we just got our other ones, and so we still have to season them.
Okay.
Yep. Just make sure you pack it. I mean, the only advice I could give you is use a little piece of board, like a 2x4 or 2x6. Pack it down so you get a nice flat seed surface, and then so you get good seed contact with that potting mix that you're using or planting mix. And then once you get the seeds in place, you know, pack it down nice to get good contact between the potting mix and the seed itself. And then just a gentle watering, you know, put a little bit of moisture on there to make sure you got some moisture around that seed and then keep it moist. Probably water, just lightly water, even with a spritzer, you could do it just to keep a light amount of moisture. Don't overwater it because then you'll wash those seeds away. Just a light amount of moisture and you'll see in 3 days or so, most of your seeds will be already germinating. So there, it's a real easy process.
There you go, Sharon. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Talking straw bale gardens today with Joel Karsten. I'm looking at right now an updated edition of his straw bale gardens book. It's called Straw Bale Gardens Complete. You can join in. We finally have some open lines. Kathy from Oak Creek is next, but there's a line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Lee Rayburn, our engineer, for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. We're talking straw bale gardening today on the Ideas Network for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Joel Karsten. Always great to have Joel come by. He's got some great books on straw bale gardens. And happy to have him here and happy to have you listening in. If you have a question about it, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Kathy in Oak Creek has something for us. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was thinking about putting bale gardening on a small patio outside my apartment. But I was wondering, does it tend to draw mice or insects or anything like that I should be concerned about?
That's a common question I get, Kathy. Actually, mice aren't really any more attracted to a straw bale garden because than they would be a normal garden, mainly because the straw bale, remember, turns into soil inside, and it kind of gets hot, real hot, early in the spring inside there, so it's not conducive, and then it stays wet all the time. So, you know, if you woke up in a hotel room and it was dripping water on your head every morning, you'd move out in a hurry. Same thing happens with that mouse. He doesn't want to stick around and try to have a nest and babies and stuff in an area where it's wet all the time. So that's really the key factor, is that moisture that prevents them from making a house. A dry straw bale tucked in your garage over the winter, absolutely. You're making a house, a mouse hotel. But out in the garden where it stays wet, you won't have any more of a problem than you would in a normal type of a garden with mice. You know, mice like gardens because there's obviously a food source there. But the number one draw for mice I've found is a lot of times people will complain about it's their straw bale garden. And I say, well, you got to take that bird feeder down that you've got right in the middle of your garden, because it's bird feeders that tend to attract rodents more so than a straw bale garden. So
there you go, Kathy. Thank you so much. Good luck with your straw bales. You know, we have an email from Joe in River Falls, and he emailed to ask if you have any tips on how to find straw bales. He's found the availability in ag areas has really dropped off in the last 5 years. You know, less oats and wheats planted, more corn and soybeans. He tried looking on your website, but availability across the country seems not to be the greatest.
Well, I'll tell you, it is getting lower and lower. You know, it's hard to find with more people doing straw bale gardening. There's a lot of the bales that get bought up. But it's a supply and demand thing. I think, you know, once a farmer and farmers see that they can get $5 or $6 for a bale of straw, the supply in some parts of the country, at least, is really coming back. So we see a lot of farmers here. I've got a couple of farmers by the Twin Cities area that actually go to the Dakotas and buy round bales. Then they bring them back here and rebale them into small squares and sell them because there's such a good profit margin to be able to do that. So farmers are smart. Once they figure out that there's some profit there, they'll start doing it, start to fill that gap. And you'll see that's one of the reasons why, you know, when people say straw bales are $5 or $6 a bale, I say, well, you better grab them while you can get them, even if they're $6, because the availability is, you know, they're not nearly as available as they were years ago. Now, people ask me all the time, can I use a large round bale or can I use one of those large square bales? And you actually can, but for most people, it's not feasible because they weigh, you know, 900 pounds. It's hard to move them around. You got to have a farm tractor or some equipment to move them around. But if you happen to be in a rural area and you've got a neighbor farmer who's got some old round bales and they're willing to deliver them, what works really the best is to cut those bales in half. And I would recommend, you know, use all precautions, but use a chainsaw. And they cut like butter with a chainsaw. You can cut them right in half and then flop them down. You got like two donuts to plant in those round bales, or the big squares. You cut them in half and then they're still 18 or 20 inches tall, even when you cut them in half. But those will work. If you leave them whole, it's hard to keep that whole bale moist and they just don't seem to do as well. But if you cut them in half, they're perfect. Actually, they work really well. You'll get about 3 years of gardening out of one of those, half of those big, large round bales or the big squares as well. So that's always an alternative. The other thing you can do, and I talk about this a whole chapter in my book, is make your own bales, which is actually pretty easy to do. You know, all you need is a great big, large Rubbermaid tub, and then you fill it up with, you know, grass clippings. As long as your grass hasn't been sprayed with anything, you can use grass clippings. You could use, you know, weeds that you pulled from somewhere. You could throw weeds in there. You could throw your trimmings from your dandelion, from your lilac bush and your dandelions you pulled, and your Valentine's Day flowers that are dead. Anything that's organic goes in that bale, and then leaves and stuff, squish it down really tight, fill it up with water overnight. That works well. And then the next day, tip that bucket out, that Rubbermaid bucket out, and you'll have a nice square block, looks like a small bale, and then wrap that with the chicken wire, like I talked about earlier, and staple that ends of it onto a 2x2 and then twist it. When you twist that 2x2, it gathers up the wire and it squeezes that bale nice and tight. Then you don't have to put strings or anything around the bale, and then pound the end of that 2x2 in the ground, and you've got a nice little bale, homemade bale that didn't cost you anything really to make. So I teach lots of people in different parts of the world. You know, we're lucky here in Wisconsin, Minnesota. We can run down to Fleet Farm or their garden center, and a lot of times we can buy bales, you know, made by a John Deere or a New Holland baler, and it's a real simple process. But you go to other parts of the world, Larry, and they don't have John Deere balers anywhere.
Right.
And if they want to do this, they need to make their own bale. So we teach them how to make a wooden baler. There's lots of real simple plans on YouTube, how to make a wooden baler, and then they fill it up with whatever organic material they can find. A lot of times it's rice straw in these parts of Asia, where in Cambodia and Philippines and places where I've been. They fill it up with rice straw or other grass, or, you know, after they squeeze sugar cane stalks, you can use sugar cane stalk to make bales. And then once you get this big clump, this bale compressed tightly together, that's really the key factor, is the compression, and it starts to decompose, you have a place where you're making soil inside of that bale, and it works great. So it doesn't necessarily even have to be a typical oat straw or wheat straw bale like you would normally think.
And I, you know, I give you kudos as well, Joel, because you have done this, shown people how to do this, as you say, in many parts of the world.
Yeah, we spent a couple of weeks in Cambodia teaching some of these really, this is some of the poorest people on earth. They're successful farmers. They grow rice really well for 7 months a year, but then 5 months of the year, they and their family, their children, are very malnourished. The only thing they end up having to eat is really storage of rice, and that's it. And they're so far from the city that they don't get any supplemental food supplies, like from, you know, food supply agencies, from emergency agencies. And so they're very malnourished, the children. So we taught them this great method, the straw bale gardening method. So even when it's flooding, which is the big problem there, for 5 months a year, it floods and then they have a drought. So we taught them this method. You'll love this. We dig a big giant hole in their farm. We pile up the soil next to the hole. We make a plateau. And we make these bales by hand, put the bales up on top of the plateau, and do straw bale gardening up on top of there. Now that's above the flood height. So even when it's monsoon rains, the rain washes through these bales very quickly and air comes back in. So the vegetables continue to thrive inside the bales. Now, when the dry season comes, they got this big giant hole in the ground right next to their garden that's holding floodwater from earlier in the season. They can put a bucket in there and use that water to keep their garden moist. So they're able to grow enough vegetables on top of this little plateau. And the hole is pretty big. It's dug with a backhoe. So it's like, you know, 35 feet by 35 feet and 15 feet deep. So it's a big hole. And they use this vegetables to feed their family. And then it's an off season, but any of their neighbors that are hungry or, you know, malnourished, they can supply food for them that time of year as well. So it's really been a success. We started with zero when I went there, and we have over 3,000 farmers now that have implemented this method of growing vegetables during the flood and drought season in Cambodia. And it's spread. It's spread now from Cambodia to Vietnam and Nepal and the Philippines. And we have a bunch of people in South Africa and other countries in Africa as well, Kenya as well. So it's
really cool.
Amazing how really adaptive cool human beings are. Yeah, you show them a little idea and they just take it and run with it. So,
well, I think it's pretty cool. Mona in New Berlin, your turn. Hi, Mona.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm so excited to have Joel's book. And this is my first year of straw bale gardening. I've been doing regular gardening for years and years. But anyway, my grandson, who's out in Colorado, who just turned 13, is also interested in growing things. So I sent him your straw bale garden complete book for his birthday. And his mom and he are having just a blast with all the ideas that are in this book. And I just can't say enough what a great book it is. I really enjoy the pictures, the information. It's so well organized. So thank you.
Wow, Joel. You're kind, Mona. Would you like a job as a publicist? That's very kind.
Honestly, it is just a terrific book for beginners. And, you know, I've read the book at least three times myself, and I keep finding new information. I was like, oh, that's a good idea. And so I know my family out in Colorado are having just the same experience. So thank you.
Oh, Mona, thank
you. That's heartwarming. I appreciate your call. That's very sweet of you.
Yes, thanks,
very
Mona.
Very kind. I tell people that I kind of write like I'm having a conversation. You know, I don't, I'm not, a lot of times you read these gardening books and man, they're really highbrow and they expect that the reader already understands and knows, you know, all the basic information. And I don't make that assumption. You know, I try to explain it as if I'm explaining it to a new young neighbor who just moved in, you know, across the cul-de-sac and I'm trying to teach him from scratch. And some of it, that means you can kind of skip over if you're a more advanced gardener like you are, Larry. But for a new gardener, sometimes, you know, just understanding basics is really important. And we give a good glossary in the back. So people, if they want to look up their favorite vegetable, they can learn, you know, how many to plant per bale and how far apart to space them and, you know, all that kind of basic information right there in the glossary. So it's a, you know, it was a
labor of love.
When I first wrote the book, I even surprised myself that the book came out as good as it did and that it's been as successful as it has. Trust me, when I started doing this, I had absolutely no idea that people would ever buy it or be interested, but they sure have. It's now in, I think, 19 languages or so, and it's all around the world. So it's become really popular.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. Well, let's see what's on other people's minds here. Gary in Madison, let's give you a chance. Hi, Gary.
Yeah, hi. I was wondering, I was thinking about starting this with one bale, and I'm wondering how many tomato plants can I put in one bale if I'm going to be doing, you know, like those cherry-type tomatoes?
Well, I hate to say this, Gary, but you're only going to be able to put one tomato in there because that the top of that tomato is going to get so big that, you know, it's not the matter of the space for the plant when the day you plant it. You know, you could plant three or four of them easily in a bale, but it's when that plant grows up and gets big. If you put two tomatoes in there, one's going to suffocate the other one, and you're going to end up with the same number of tomatoes as if you'd only planted one in that bale anyway. So if you're doing big hybrids like that, I would just recommend one. If you're doing heirloom tomatoes and you've got big bales, you know, good 40-inch long bales, if you get these short little 30-inch bales, you're not going to be able to fit two in there. But if you got good long bales, you can fit two of the heirloom varieties in there. But those are only going to usually give you, you know, 10 or 12, maybe 15 tomatoes per plant, those heirlooms. But you can probably fit two of those in a bale. Otherwise, I would just stick with one. And you'll see why, you know, the day you plant it, you'll say, man, I could fit another one in here. But trust me, when you get to August, you're gonna be amazed at how big that tomato has become. And now, don't get me wrong. You can still plant other things in that bale.
That's what I was going to say.
You might put some basil in the side or put some carrots around that tomato. You know, you could do some other things, but only one of the big giant plants like a tomato or a cucumber. You know, you'd only want to put one cucumber because they're going to get big too, or a squash. Zucchinis will get, you know, 6 feet wide. And I always plant them in the middle on top of the bale, but the zucchini is, you know, 3 weeks into the season, it already tips to the side because of the weight to the plant. And then it kind of grows off the side of the bale and you get, you know, 60 zucchinis off of one plant. It's pretty amazing. Your neighbors start pulling the curtains shut when they see you coming because they know you're bringing them more zucchini and they don't want it anymore.
Well, I've done squash when on a, because you are exactly right. If you get a hybrid tomato plant, one is plenty, but then I put squash on the side of the bale, and it worked out really well.
Yeah, they'll take off and run in a different direction. Now, this last year, I started doing these, well, actually a couple years ago, I started doing these cattle panel arches. And you'll see now, if you're on social media, if anybody's on Facebook and you do straw bale gardening on Facebook, you'll see lots of people are doing it now. These cattle panels, you know, the 16-foot long, 52-inch wide, and they got the big squares. They're 4-gauge steel, but you bend them up and you kind of make an arch, and then you put a bale underneath them and plant your squash, and your squash will climb right up over the top, or your tomatoes or cucumbers or whatever climb up over these arches, and it's real pretty. You know,
yeah,
my
really
neighbor
is.
Has complimented me a couple of times. She's like, I just love those new cattle panel arches you do. They're so attractive to look at compared, you know, not that it's ugly, but compared to just fence posts at the end of the row and wires back and forth is not really super attractive to make a trellis, but this really adds something. So we started doing that a couple of years ago, and now I've added, I don't know if you noticed in that new book that I sent you, Larry, but there's a chapter in there about using those two cattle panel arches side by side to build a greenhouse in the spring. And you can do this for under $100. It's really simple to do. You attach the two cattle panels together with zip ties, and then on the outside edges of the cattle panels, way on the ends, you put a little wooden strip, or you can use polyethylene pipe, and you zip tie it on. Then you drape your plastic over the top, and you staple the plastic to that polyethylene pipe or that wood strip on the end. And then you put the end panels on, and you staple those. And then around all the way around the base, I put 2x4s, so I can staple my plastic to the 2x4s at the bottom. Then I put a zipper door. You can buy these little, they're called zip wall zipper doors.
Yeah.
And you just stick it on. It's got an adhesive back. So you peel it off, stick it on that end panel, and then you unzip it and cut the plastic out. Now you got a door to go in and out. Now here's the kicker. You put 6 straw bales inside there, and you start conditioning them. What happens when those bales get started conditioning? They get warm. They get hot inside. Sometimes 130 or 140 degrees inside that bale. And that will keep that greenhouse warm. Even here in Minnesota, usually the beginning of April is when I put mine out. Mine have been out there for 10 days now. And I've been knocking snow off the top of them the last few days. But because they won't take the weight of that snow like a normal greenhouse would. But so you got to be a little bit careful. I mean, this is a, you know, $85 greenhouse. This isn't an $8,500 greenhouse. And so then here's the kicker. When I get to the middle of May, I can plant a couple tomatoes in the bales inside that greenhouse. Now I pull the cover off the plastic, and that becomes the garden. So yeah. This greenhouse turns into the garden for the summer. And you got a big head start on your bales that you put inside there. The other thing I'll do is put seed trays on top of the bales in this little greenhouse, and the bottom heat from those bales will help me start seeds outside in this greenhouse. So on top of 3 bales, you can fit 5 seed trays, and I can fit 36 seeds in a seed tray. So with 2 sides, I can fit 360 seeds in my one little greenhouse, and I heat the whole thing for free. So it really is a bargain.
Yeah, but you know, it cost you $85.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. I'll tell you, you know, one tray of, I go to the garden center in the spring and buy a flat of vegetables, you know, pre-starts, bedding plants to come home and plant. You can spend $100 in 5 minutes. I mean, it doesn't take very long. So starting your own seeds is a heck of a bargain. I can start enough in one little greenhouse for the whole neighborhood. So,
Scott in Hayward, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hello there. I do have a question at the end of this, but I wanted to comment that we did 12 bales last summer for the first time we tried it, and we really appreciated the help we got from Joel's book. It was just great. We grew tomatoes, one per bale, and with carrots in there, the most beautiful carrots we've ever had, pulled out so easy. Cucumbers, and the amazing thing was we grew squash, delicata, spaghetti squash. We've got 20 each of those, and some Lakota, and that was just great. The question we had was we had a lot of grass growing out of the straw bales. They look like chia pets. And is there a way to pick a straw bale that wouldn't have that problem?
Well, that's your farmer who baled that straw bale. When he combined the oats or the wheat that bale's made of, he didn't have the glean adjusted right on his combine. And so he was leaving seeds left on the stalks after he was done combining. My dad used to call that leaving money in the field. And so then when he baled up the straw, all these leftover oats or wheat seeds were still in there. A good way to do it, you can get some, it's organic, it's a vinegar-based herbicide, but you can't use just off-the-shelf vinegar. You got to get stronger vinegar. You like the 20 or 30% acetic acid is really what you're looking for. There's a few of those out there that are available. Those work really well, especially on those little tiny sprouts. Even table vinegar will work on these if you put it on heavy enough on a hot day. But just wipe it on. I like to use one of those sponge mops that fold in half. You know how those mops, you slide the handle down and it squeezes it in half? Those sponge mops work really well because you can put a cake pan out there and put your vinegar in it. Then you just dunk that end of that sponge mop and wring it out really good because wherever that vinegar touches, it's going to kill. And then wipe the sides of the bales. And if you get those little sprouts when they first come out, that'll knock them back and that'll kill them. You know, that vinegar won't necessarily kill a great big huge thistle because they're pretty tough, but it'll kill those little tiny starts when they first come out of the bale. The other option is to let them grow out a little bit, and then you go out there with a scissors and a pan, and you cut all those little sprouts off, and you bring them in the house and put them in a blender and make yourself a wheatgrass smoothie. If you look up, there's lots of recipes online, Larry. People drink this stuff, wheatgrass smoothie. I would never drink it myself, but apparently it's a health food. Wheatgrass or oatgrass smoothies. There's recipes online for both of those. So you could do that. You know, there people will cover with black plastic for a couple of days and the heat will kill them. You know, if it's before you've planted anything in the bales, you could do that. You could roll the bales over and then roll them back, and that'll, you know, spend 3 or 4 days laying upside down, and that'll usually kill the ones on the top of the bale. For some other people, they just let them grow, and it really doesn't hurt a whole lot. You know, they'll get 8-10 inches long, and then they kind of dry up at that point. So, yeah. You know, it's kind of up to you. If you want it to look really nice, you could also use your weed whacker and just go out there and mow the sides off a little bit. And then next year, don't buy from the same farmer because unless he's adjusted his combine and he's got that glean adjusted right, then you won't get any seeds at all. There are some years where, man, I don't get a single sprout out of my bales. And then the next year I'll get bales from a different guy. And man, they do. They look like chia pets out there.
Scott, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Thanks, Scott.
Joel Karsten, our guest today, the author of several books on straw bale gardens. I happen to have his Straw Bales Complete, which is his updated edition, breakthrough method for growing vegetables anywhere earlier and with no weeding. That's a very big point I want to emphasize here. He is our guest. You can join in. Open lines now. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today talking straw bale gardening, Joel Karsten, a graduate from the University of Minnesota, his bachelor's degree in horticulture science. He's written a number of best-selling books on the straw bale gardening method that he pioneered. So it's always great to have Joel come by. And certainly, if you have questions, you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, phone at 800-642-1234. Nikki called to ask when she should start conditioning her bale. I guess that depends a little on when you want to start your garden, Joel.
That's true. I always recommend to begin 20 days prior to your location's average last frost date. So the first thing you need to do is find out what your average last frost date is. And then come 20 days before that, and that's a good time to start conditioning if you're doing this entirely outside. You know, if you have a greenhouse, the little greenhouse that we just talked about, you could start them earlier, you know, beginning of April. But if you're doing it outside, you want to wait till 20 days before your average last frost. That it takes about 12 to 18 days to get the bales ready, and then you'll be planting right at that average last frost. That's not your record last frost date. Keep that in mind. but it's your average. And so you'll want to have you know, something available to be able, if you're planting and you've got seeds germinated, to be able to cover things up if you get started early, you know, because the bales will give some heat, but you'll still want to cover them up if it gets chilly at night. So that's where that little cover that you can slide over the top comes in real handy. If it's a late spring frost, we used to use milk jugs when I was a kid.
Yeah. Remember that.
Milk cartons. We'd go out. Yeah. Cover them up.
Katie in Sheboygan has something for us. Let's go to her. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Katie.
Hi. I'm wondering about raised beds, if you can put them in, because my raised beds are just full of weeds, and it's beyond, like pulling them at this point. Take the dirt out and put raised beds on, like, in that section?
Sure, absolutely. There's no reason why you can't. Yeah,
okay.
Fill them up with bales. I get a lot of people that will scold me when they see me give a presentation because they'll say, why weren't you here 2 years ago? Because the last two summers I spent building raised beds, and now I spent all this money and all this time, and I could have just done a row of straw bales and had the problem solved. It really is a simple way to do it. And I see people, you know, they worry about what they're going to put around their raised beds and, you know, spending all this money and, you know, then they got to buy all the compost to fill up the raised beds, and it's heavy to carry, and they could just simply do a row of straw bales and have the same thing accomplished for, you know, $25 worth of straw bales, and they'd be in business for the same thing. So it definitely is a shortcut, that's for sure.
I always appreciate the photos that you have in your book, because you have so many good photos and diagrams, and I always think they look really pretty when those the straw bales, when the vegetables and so forth are growing on them. It looks pretty nice.
Yeah. You know, of any complaint I ever get from somebody, it's usually that they don't like how the straw bale garden looks early in the spring and then late in the fall, you know, when the plants aren't thriving on top. It's just like an old bale of straw laying in your yard. And I mean, I can understand that. You know, I'm from a farm and it doesn't bother me at all. I can understand how that would, you know, not be the most attractive thing in the world. So, you know, some kind of a container around them is a common thing for people who don't like the way they look. But I encourage people to plant flowers in the sides. You know, you can put impatiens or petunias or, you know, short varieties of zinnias in the sides of the bales or right up near the base of the bales, where they'll get runoff water from the bale garden and runoff fertilizer. They'll be just beautiful. And then they fill in, they make like a nice skirt of color all the way around your garden. So that's an easy way to dress up the garden a little bit, make it look more attractive.
Let's go to Oscar next in Shatek. Hi, Oscar.
Hi. I need to defend the farmers a little bit, since I'm a farmer, been farming for about 50 years and growing oats all that time. And depends on how the crop matures, but a lot of years we get really light oats that aren't worth saving, so they just blow out the back of the combine, and so they may get baled up into a bale and grow, despite the fact that they're just not much more than a hull, they will still grow. My other comment is that I've used hay bales for straw bale gardening and have had really good success. And this summer, I'm going to try a cornstalk bale.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now, what is
cornstalk bales?
Yeah, what does he need to worry about for cornstalk bales?
Well, there's really nothing to worry about. It's just going to take a little longer, Oscar, to get those things to condition, because there's so much more lignin in that cornstalk. It takes longer to break down. So don't be surprised if it takes, you know, 25 or 30 days to get those bales ready. And you'll know, you can put a temperature probe or even stick your hand down inside that bale. If you can make a hole in there, as soon as it'll heat up. And then as soon as it drops down below your body temperature, below 100 degrees, then you'll know it's time to plant. But if it still feels hot on your hand, be cautious about planting in there, because it'll kill a tomato overnight if it's above 102 or 103, 104 degrees inside that bale, and you stick a root right down in that zone. So that's the only thing I would caution you about, but they'll work fine. You know, anything that decomposes becomes soil. So it really doesn't matter what we use. Anything that will decompose will turn into soil, and that's really what we're after, is making our own soil inside of this bale. So corn stalks certainly do. I mean, we see, you know, you plow them into the field, and 2 years later, they've completely disintegrated and become soil, even out in the middle of the field. So it will certainly work. It just takes a little bit longer to condition.
There you go, Oscar. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call and for the and defending farmers a little bit there, too. I appreciate that.
There you go. Ellen, I'm a good defender of farmers, too.
Ellen and Neosha, your turn. Hi, Ellen.
Good morning to you both, and thank you so much. I got so excited during this program, I had to put my lunch down and start taking some notes. I bought a polyethylene, I think it is, greenhouse about 10 years ago, and it and I have not been friends because I can't get the temperature properly regulated. So when you, Joel, started talking about your pork panel greenhouse and how the straw bales can heat that up and modulate the temperature, I'm going to try that in this greenhouse, and maybe we can start a relationship.
Yeah, sure. Go look at our Facebook page. I just put a picture on there not long ago of it's a great big high tunnel. It's 24 or 30 feet wide and 100 feet long.
Wow.
And they've got, I don't know, probably 800 or 1,000 bales inside there, and that's the only heat source they have inside the greenhouse is just
wonderful.
Straw bales,
so. I'm excited about this. I can't wait to try it, and I've got a wonderful farmer down the road that gives me beautiful wheat straw, so I'm going to get busy on this. It'll be my Easter project.
Well, take some photos, great. Ellen, and send them to me, will you?
I sure will, Larry. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's go to Rich in New Berlin next. Hi, Rich.
Hello. This is kind of off subject, but I last year I bought some bagged combination of compost and manure and used that in some container gardening and got some of the most god-awful plants you ever saw in your life. Huge plants and no fruit and no flowers. So I'm wondering, what did I do wrong and what can I do to amend this for this year?
Lots of nitrogen in there, I bet you. Joel?
Yeah, that's a common thing. If you get too much nitrogen, you'll get lots of plant growth, lots of vine growth on your tomatoes, but you don't get any fruit set. And that's just an overdose of nitrogen usually. So that probably is what caused it. I can't imagine that compost, regular manure type compost, would have had that much nitrogen in it, but maybe that was supplemented with some nitrogen or something. You know, that's the only thing I can think of.
Maybe it was chicken manure.
Yeah, that's 9% nitrogen. Chicken manure is pretty hot. So that could have been it too. I would try dumping it out and mixing some peat moss in with it to try to, you know, mellow it out a little bit and give you some better drainage, maybe a 50-50 mix with what you have in the container and then mix it with some peat moss, put it back in there, try it again this year. Better drainage might help too.
Yeah.
Helps get rid of some of that nitrogen.
Yeah, some of that nitrogen would have been used up anyway, but the peat moss is not a bad idea just for the moisture issues and aeration and so forth. Rich, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. You mentioned your Facebook page. How do people find the Facebook page?
If you go on, if you just search Straw Bale Gardening on Facebook, you'll find a whole bunch of groups and pages. There's over 105 groups of people that do straw bale gardening, and that's just in English. So then that doesn't count all the ones in other languages on Facebook. But our main page is called Learn to Grow a Straw Bale Garden. And when I set it up, you know, when Facebook first started, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, I had no idea it would become anything, and I wouldn't be able to ever change the name. So I called it Learn to Grow a Straw Bale Garden. Now, today, I would never do that because it's way too long for people to remember. But you'll find us. We're the big page. We have 110,000 people or so that are members of our page, and you'll see lots of pictures and comments, and, you know, people go tell all the good things, and then if they have a problem, they'll talk about that as well. So it's a great place to help get answers to questions. Is social media. Facebook in particular is really popular with straw bale gardeners. So.
And your books, how do people get copies of your books And you've got a couple that have been...
Our website, yeah.
A couple of them have just been reissued, so...
Yeah, Strawbale Gardens Complete Updated Edition is the latest one. And they can get those on our website, strawbalegardens.com. It's easy to find. Even if you misspell it, you'll probably still find us. So strawbalegardens.com. I'll tell you, too, I don't know if you're a fan of TEDx, Larry.
Yes.
If you ever have listened to any TED Talks. I just did a TEDx talk not long ago about strawbale gardening. So if people are interested, you know, it's a fun little thing to look at, watch TED videos too. Sometimes you get hooked on those and you can't stop watching them. You watch one after another. But if you search for my name, Joel Karsten, and then TEDx, you can find it on YouTube and watch it. It's only 16 minutes long, but it's kind of the whole history of straw and some of the projects we did in Cambodia and the Philippines and some of those. It's about helping to solve the hunger problem around the world using the strawbale gardens technique. So I'd love it if people would go and watch that, too. That'd be great.
Joel Karsten, our guest today. Joel is the author of Strawbale Gardens, Strawbale Gardens Complete. He's done, as you've heard and as you're hearing, he's done a whole lot of work, even all around the world, and his methods have spread. Always great to talk with him on Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along for another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here taking a look at strawbale gardening today with our guest, Joel Karsten. Joel is kind of the godfather, could we say, of strawbale gardenings. His updated edition of his book, Strawbale Gardens Complete, has been, now that's updated and issued, reissued. So it's great to have him along. And lots of callers online, Joel, to talk with you. So I'm going to go right to the phones here and to Nelson. And yeah, Nelson and Madison, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. Thanks, guys. This has been really informative. I appreciate you guys being online and doing this.
Well, it's great to have you calling in. What can we do for you?
So you had kind of went on the topic about planting in the sides of the hay bales. So I had come up with the idea of planting marigolds because I live out in the country and live in a yurt.
Sure.
And we have a goat and dogs, so we need everything kind of lifted off the ground. So I was wondering if marigolds would do well in the sides of the bales to keep the other rodents away.
Yeah, they thrive in the sides of the bales. And lots of people are firm believers that marigolds are a great general sort of pesticide. They keep other animals away, mainly because they don't like the smell, I think. I don't know exactly what it is, but I don't really care for the smell myself. So I can understand if a deer wouldn't like it. But no, marigolds are easy to grow, and they do well in the sides of strawbales. You'll see lots of pictures on Pinterest and our Facebook page and on Twitter of people who do strawbale gardening who will put marigolds in the sides of the bale. So that's certainly an option.
There you go, Nelson. Thanks a lot for calling. On to Carol in McFarland next. Hi, Carol.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Okay, I have a question. So in our straw bales, well, I've also seen temps that they're supposed to get up to like 120, but I'm not even sure they get to, when we stick the thermometer in, they don't necessarily even get up to 100, but yet they change colors and we grow great tomatoes. And also, too, then we also stick zucchini plants towards the probably middle to bottom half of the straw bales, and they don't seem to produce very well. So any comments?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the production of bacteria inside the bales is what causes them to get warm. So it kind of depends on exactly what bacteria you're using, you know, which ones are there, not that you're using, but which ones are already present. And if they're thermophilic or aerobic bacteria, what we want are the aerobic bacteria. And they're Bacillus thuringiensis. There's a couple of different Bacillus species of bacteria that we want. And when you give them a little nitrogen and water, which is what they really want, then they begin to reproduce. And when bacteria reproduce, they don't have babies or lay eggs. Instead, they split in half. That's how they reproduce. And if you watch them under a microscope while they're growing, right before they split in half, they pinch in the middle and then they start to vibrate. And that vibration causes friction. It's just like when you rub your hands together. What happens? Your hands get warm, right? So that's these little bacteria vibrating back and forth before they split in half to reproduce. That's what causes the friction that dissipates as heat that causes those bales to heat up. This is the same thing that causes your compost pile to heat up. If you've ever heard of a silage pile starting on fire or a big hay pile in a barn starting on fire, that's thermophilic bacteria. Now, once aerobic bacteria are no longer able to survive, usually because it's too wet and there's not a good source of oxygen, then thermophilic bacteria will start to develop. And those will take the temperature up to 160, 170, even 180 degrees. And that's where you start to get smoldering and all of a sudden you can get actual fire. Now, those are not going to develop inside of a straw bale. It's almost impossible, mainly because we don't have the pressure and we have lots of air around a straw bale, so it's easy for oxygen to get into the bale, and we have good ventilation around the bales. So we never have to worry about that happening with the bale. But if you had a huge pile of bales, now there's potential for that thermophilic bacteria to develop. So usually the temperature of the bale's maximum is going to get about 130, 140 degrees. If you get a few thermophilic, you can get a little bit warmer than that, but 130, 140 is about the max normally. But oftentimes you'll get a bale that will completely condition, but it never really gets quote unquote hot, or at least you don't catch it in the hot places inside the bale. But don't worry about it. It'll still work just fine. Just understand that that's what's causing it. I find that part really fascinating.
Yeah.
About what causes that heat to be produced inside of any organic material as it decomposes.
Carol, I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jay and O'Connell, it's your turn. Hi, Jay.
Yeah, I had two quick questions. First one was the farmer had talked about different compositions of bales, and he had mentioned hay bales, and everybody talks about straw bales. What is the pros and cons either way? Or is there not much of a difference? And my second question will be, is heirloom tomatoes just they just produce less than a regular hybrid tomato? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, let's start with the hay straw. If you ask a typical, like a dairy farmer, what's a hay bale? They're going to say, well, it's alfalfa. It's a crop grown specifically for nutrition to feed our livestock, our cattle or our horses or whatever. If you ask a horse farmer what's a hay bale, a lot of times they'll say, well, that could be grass or alfalfa. And horses a lot of times will eat baled grass, and we call that hay. But it's mainly the target is fodder. This is food for livestock is a hay bale. A straw bale is usually bedding for livestock. So it's dried down stalks of oats and wheat normally, and barley, different parts of the country, could be rice straw, but it's usually used just as an absorption mechanism to absorb urine from livestock in a pen. And once it's fully saturated, of course, then the farmer gets his son with a pitchfork to go in there and scoop all that wet straw into a manure spreader and haul it away. So it's like a diaper for livestock. You can use either one. I've always started using straw because it was so much less expensive. Hay bales, because they're food, they're typically more expensive. They're not really a byproduct of the crop. They are the crop. The hay bales are the crop. So they're usually more expensive. You know, $10 for a nice alfalfa bale of hay is about the going price, maybe even more than that these days. And a bale of straw, you know, a lot of times if you get it right from a farmer, you get it for $3 or $4. So it's a lot less expensive. Hay bales will work just fine. They don't hold as much moisture as straw bales will, but they have more protein in them, and protein translates to nitrogen, which is what plants need, one of the base nutrients plants need to grow. So you'll see that hay bales will give you as good or better of a garden than a straw bale will, but it tends to take a little bit more water. and it will completely disintegrate in 1 year. So it will decompose completely in that one season, where straw bales, sometimes you can get 2 years out of them. Hay bales are usually gone in 1 year just because of that high content of nitrogen, and the bacteria really go to town on it, break it down completely. So either one's possible, but you know, if you have your druthers, I guess I'd pick a straw bale, less expensive and it's going to last a little bit longer than a hay bale.
Thank you, Jay. Appreciate it. Barbara in Fitchburg, it's your turn. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Joel. Thanks for taking my call. We used straw bales last year, and it was fabulous. And but when we bought our bales this year, the twine is around, it's going across the open ends of the straws. You know what I mean? And so I know what your book says, that you should put the straws sideways in that case, because you don't want to plant around the twine. But it just seems like it's going to be hard for the fertilizer and the water and stuff to get down there, because it's going to have to go across the straws.
Oh, you got a nice little piece on that in your book.
Yeah, I got two solutions for you. One is you could just put two new strings around it the other direction. Buy some twine, wrap it around there and get it as tight as you can, and then cut the old strings off. And the bale will expand a little bit because you're not going to get it nearly as tight as that machine did, but you can just crisscross the strings, run them the other direction. The other option is to just pretend that you didn't even recognize that there's a difference, because you know what? In the long run, it's really not going to make a huge difference. It's probably going to take a little bit longer to get the water and the fertilizer to work down into the bales. But you know, maybe an extra 2 days of conditioning versus instead of 12 days, it might take 14 or something, but it's really not a deal breaker which direction the string runs. You definitely want to make sure the strings stay intact. That's important, because we need to maintain that compression, that squeezing action on the bales. If the strings are caught accidentally, that's worst case scenario. Now you got to get some new strings and put around there and try to tighten them up as best you can. So definitely don't want the strings to get cut. So that's the main reason I tell people to run the strings around the bales, is because when you're planting in the top of the bale, you're usually using something to make the holes, and that sharp spade or a hand trowel is going to easily slice through those strings, and then you're in trouble. Then you got to retie the strings, and it becomes more difficult. If the strings are under the bale, how are you going to get new strings underneath there to retie them? So it can just be more difficult. It really isn't going to matter. That's the fortunate thing, is it's going to be successful no matter which way you do it.
And I noticed in your Straw Bale Gardens Complete, you talk sometimes about if you want to get the fertilizer down in there a little deeper into the soil, you could trowel down or whatever 4 or 5 inches and then throw the fertilizer down in there a little deeper.
Right. Yeah. Make a holes with a stake, a wooden stake or a piece of pipe or whatever you got handy, and a hammer. Just make a few holes in the bale if they're real tight and you can't get any to work down in there, and then just pour it down those little holes, especially with the organic stuff. Our bale buster that we sell now, this conditioning fertilizer, is made of blood meal. And oftentimes I'll get a call from somebody in the midsummer and they'll say, boy, for some reason, my garden really smells. I don't know what, it smells like dead animals. And then I have to explain to them that they put blood meal on there, and blood meal is, you know, blood is from the processing you know, it's dead animal blood. And so when that starts to decompose, it's going to smell like, you know, rotting animals. So if you can get it into the bale, you have less surface area and you won't get nearly as much smell that will come from that organic fertilizer that you're using. If you use regular old NPK in a lawn fertilizer, well, that doesn't smell at all. So that's not a problem. But the organic stuff, that's what you get along with it, is a little bit of smell.
And Barb, thanks again. Sarah in Rio, it's your turn. Hi, Sarah.
Good afternoon, or good morning. No, I guess it is afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. What's on your mind?
I wanted to mention that I think it should be possible to get hay, particularly spoiled hay, that you would not have to pay. You know, you should be able to pick that up for a couple of dollars. And what I would do would be to check Craigslist, especially if we're having a whole lot of rain during haying season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody bales up hay, it's called hot. When they bale it up, it's too moist. and it starts to decompose inside the bales. And basically, they're going to have a whole lot of straw bale gardening bales if they don't, you know, if they don't have anything else to do with them. Now, horses can't eat hay that has any mold on them or any spoilage at all. It's really bad for horses, but cattle can kind of sort through it, and they'll pick it apart, and they'll eat the good parts and leave the bad parts, and it won't necessarily hurt them. But it's, so the best place to go is actually a horse farmer, because if they got a pile of bales and those bales get rained on, well, you just got a whole bunch of really nice priced hay bales for your straw bale garden from that horse farmer. They usually want to get rid of them once they get rained on.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you so much for calling. You know, just talking about that. Ken says he gets free bales every year by waiting for brush cleanup in fall when everybody's throwing out their decorative bales.
Yeah. Yeah, I myself have been known to drive by. I drove by a car dealership one time, and they had a whole bunch of straw bales out in their parking lot, you know, as decoration for the fall. And I stopped in and knocked on the window, and I said, "Hey, what are you guys doing with those bales?" And he said, "We got a guy coming to haul them away. Why, do you want them?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll take them." So I got them for free too from a car dealership of all places that was just had them out for decoration. So yeah, you'd be surprised when you become a straw bale gardener how you start looking for straw bales everywhere you go.
Mike in Wauwatosa, hello to you. Thanks for calling.
Hi, I have. Going to be starting the straw bale gardening just this spring, and I went around just like you said last fall and collected bales from people who put them out after their Halloween decorations. So I've got quite a few, and I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, and I've been a gardener from way back, and I was thinking they're kind of too thin. I would think that the sides would dry out, so I was thinking of doubling, making a bed with two bales side by side, and then putting compost in between the two bales and planting in that. What do you think of that? Is it going to get too hot?
No, it won't necessarily get too hot, but what you want to avoid crop shading. So if you start putting, you know, bales side by side, and so you're planting something in each bale, and then you're going to plant something in between the two bales, now you got three plants growing real close together sideways, and you start to get crop shading. So the reason I recommend one row of bales is because you get a lot more surface area to plant in the sides and in the top, and you avoid that crop shading factor. If you keep the rows of bales, you know, 5 or 6 feet apart, it just lets everything get more sunlight and more air circulation, and that air circulation keeps the foliage dry, and dry foliage stops the spread of disease, and it also helps prevent insect problems in your garden. So ideally, I probably wouldn't recommend it, but you know, you could, I know sometimes when you look at a bale, you think, why would I put it upright when it's so tall and it seems so skinny? But if you do the math, if you were to tip that bale down the flat way, so the strings are running on the top, now you've got two short sides and one long top versus having two long sides and one short top. So you actually have less surface area to plant if you tip it down flat, if you're taking advantage of planting the sides. So it's a little good little math equation for you too, but you certainly could do it and see how it works. You know, try a couple bales that way and then do the rest of them the typical way and see what the results are that you get. You know, I'm not against anybody trying experiments. You certainly can try your own experiments and see what you come up with and take pictures and, you know, spread the word. If it works really well, let me know. I'd love to hear about it. So.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you so much for calling. Joel, something new I think in your book this year is that your updated version is growing mushrooms in straw, and of course, mushrooms. You know, I always get some mushrooms growing up in my bales just when I'm, things are working well. But you're talking about mushrooms you're going to eat.
Yeah, you grow them on purpose. And in order to do that, there's one key step that people need to do, and that is to pasteurize your straw bale. And there's a number of different ways to do this, but I outline in my book one way that I found works really simple. If you have a big enough cooler, and you can buy these great big coolers, I don't know if I'd buy it specifically for this, but you can fit a bale into the cooler, that works well, and then you dump hot water on top of it. It takes about 6 gallons of hot water for a straw bale. So if you got a big turkey fryer cooker, fill that up with water, and then be real careful. Get somebody to help you so you don't spill it, and dump that boiling water on top of the bale and close the lid on that cooler and wait 1 hour. Now you've got a pasteurized bale that any of the original mushroom spores in there will be dead. And now you inoculate that bale. So you can buy inoculant online. There's lots of places that sell it for like oyster mushrooms. You can get Chinese oysters or wine caps will grow well. There's a Chinese oyster, Phoenix oyster. I did several oyster mushrooms. Almost any of the oyster varieties will work for this. And you just punch a few holes and pour the inoculant on the bale, kind of rub it all over. Then you wrap the whole bale like a taco into a, or a burrito into a plastic, you know, just clear plastic, and let it set for 2 weeks in the shade. And then keep it nice and moist. You know, I want to check in that plastic every once in a while, make sure it's nice and moist in there. And if there's any green spots that develop, that's mold. So you want to spray that real quick with some chlorine bleach solution just to kill that mold. But and you'll see after 2 weeks, you'll see little tiny mushrooms start to grow. And now you take the plastic off and you let the air circulate around it. And I am telling you, Larry, you will get 30 pounds of mushrooms. You'll get three flushes of mushrooms. And I always tell people don't eat the mushrooms because if you don't know what they are, you shouldn't be eating them. But you'll be able to tell these oysters because they're all the same. You know, they'll all look the same and all have the same characteristics. So you know that's your target mushroom that you were trying to grow. If any other ones would happen to grow up, you want to cut those off and get rid of them. But you target – you'll have mushrooms – unbelievably, a mushrooms three times a day. You'll be sick of eating mushrooms. And you, of course, you can dry mushrooms and you can, you know, save them for later use as well. But they're amazingly productive off of one bale. I must have harvested at least 35 or 40 pounds of mushrooms off of one bale. And when you're all done with it, you can still use the bale to plant. So it's still not used up. You know, the inside is all full of this mushroom mycelium, which are like the roots of the mushroom plant. What we eat is really the fruit of the mushroom itself. So you can plant right into this bale when you're all done harvesting mushrooms. They get broken down really nice inside and all ready for plant roots to go in there. So it's a fun little thing.
It looked like a lot of fun to me, and I enjoy mushrooms. I don't know, 30 pounds, that's a lot. That's a lot of mushrooms. Yeah. That's a lot of mushrooms.
Yeah. If you don't have one of those big coolers to use, too, a little trick that I convinced my wife to help me try is we made a box out of straw bales and then we lined it with plastic and we put one straw bale in the middle and then pour the hot water over that. And so the plastic is kind of held in position by these other six bales, but it takes two people. You really got to have a helper to make sure you don't spill the hot water and you know that you're careful about it because it's not easy to do. Then wrap it up with the plastic and cover it up with another bale and wait an hour and come back and it's all pasteurized for you.
Well, you know, I've got one of those great big coolers and I was actually just thinking the other day, what am I going to do with this thing? Because I haven't used it in a long time, but now I got a new use for it. Joel.
There you go. You could rent it out, Larry.
There you go. Oh, man. It's
cooler.
It's always a pleasure, Joel. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I love being on your show. It's great. Thank you so much.
And your website is?
Strawbalegardens.com.
Strawbalegardens.com. Joel Karsten, our guest. His Facebook, Learn to Grow a Straw Bale Garden. And I'm sure we'll have him back and we'll do this again with him. Joel Karsten. His book, Straw Bale Gardens, Complete Updated Edition. Thank you so much for listening in. I'm losing my voice, so I'll say join us again Monday for another show.